hello. Okay. This is Gordon Martinez. The show is called American Honor, brought to you by RBN. And the call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. The show is all about exposing corruption, talking about some of the present-day corruption that's still going on, and any other form of local, state, or federal corruption that the listener out there has come across, and let's talk about it. It's pretty much wide open. It's a target-rich environment. I just happened to read a Facebook entry by one of the spokespersons for the Bundys and all the American patriots that have been illegally detained and put in prison without even being charged. And the trial is ongoing. Apparently, next week, the courtroom will be dark, and then the defense will have its turn to present the case. And a hell of a case it is. Nothing but lies, cheating, misuse of informants, prosecutorial misconduct, and judicial misconduct. This has got it all. Hopefully the defense will be able to enlighten everybody. But Facebook is a pretty good source of information. But the spokesperson for the Bundys was talking a lot about you basically giving up your privacy rights to the federal government, and then the federal government can turn right around and use those violated civil rights with the use of Facebook and their help. I don't know what we can do about that. I know that my position is kind of simplistic. I like the use of the word alleged. Alleged, kind of like Senate Majority Leader, former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Dirty Harry, as he's known by in Nevada. I always kind of like throw the word alleged around, that he was the one basically that started all this mess because they wanted the Clive Bundy property. And you use diversions like not paying their taxes, not abiding by the BLM, their rules and regulations, which keeps getting stricter and stricter, especially about controlled burns. I mean, the situation with Dwight and Stephen Hammond up in Burns, Oregon, where they obtained a permit to do a controlled burn, which helps the vegetation come back the following season a lot thicker, and basically just provides food for the cattle on that particular piece of property. But the real reason that the Dwight and Stephen Hammonds were railroaded, allegedly, and put in prison is because on the word of the BLM, They allowed purposely to have that control burn burn out of control and burn several acres on an adjacent parcel. Well, as true to form, the BLM charged the Dwight and Stephen Hammond with arson. And one of the reasons that you can charge somebody with arson is you have to show malicious intent. Well, how can they show malicious intent when they obtain a permit in order to do a controlled burn? And accidentally, it got out of hand. So the BLM, the feds, charged the Hammonds with arson. And then some pencil neck dirty lawyer in the Justice Department finds a 1974 law, federal law, that also applies for somebody that commits arson. And that's what was applied against Stephen and Dwight Hammond, for which they are in prison for an extra 5 years. How the federal government can get away with this and convince everybody that Dwight and Stephen Hammond are just no good dirty ranchers that need to be eliminated, so that the land for which the Hammond's cattle was on could be sold to the Russian or leased to the Russians for the uranium deposits that are on that land. And of course, allegedly, our Dirty Harry has got his fingers in this. And there's just no doubt that he's a very smart man, but he is also allegedly unethical and dishonorable and crooked as just the sun shines. So, just so, and what I love to do is I love to tell everybody what I believe is the backstory. And we can just go on from there. Well, I notice on the roll here, Ava in Wisconsin is on the line. Ava, how you doing tonight? Hello, Ava. Are you there? Well, looks like we lost Ava. Let's go to Doug in Virginia.
Buddy.
Hey, so how are things going?
Well, you know, the weather's finally starting to warm up. I get to stand outside now and smoke my cigars and watch all my neighbors behave badly and then report them immediately, like you do at the cantankerous old law enforcement person that's retired.
Oh, really?
Of course.
So I wanted to talk to you about, and I was hoping that you saw the documentary or movie, as you would call it, about the Waco and the rules of engagement. Did you ever get a chance to review that?
No, I have not. It's rules of engagement. I'm going to have to go deep diving on this. I've been running around. I'm transitioning into the private sector now, so I'm going for job interviews. But
no kidding.
Yes. I start next week, the private security company.
All right. What are you going to be doing? Intel section of the security company, or
no,
what is it exactly going to do?
I am I'm working running a shift of cloud storage facilities.
You're running the shift?
Yes, I'll be running shifts.
Oh.
So this is, well, yeah. You know, it's a seller's market here, not a buyer's market. So I got to wait a little bit. I got other things cooking; they just haven't happened yet.
Right. Well, you know, I try to keep busy too, especially with my radio shows and my column in the newspaper. Things are getting a little bit out of hand with the Bundy situation. The prosecution more and more is revealing that they had numerous informants, paid informants, that were working for the federal government inside the Bundy Ranch and inside their organization. You know, I guess maybe it's just my long-term experience in police work. I always get kind of a funny, non-believing attitude whenever all of a sudden informants begin coming out of the woodwork, being part of several operations where it was along with the police and the federal government. It seems like you just never quite get all the information at the beginning, and you don't know really who all the players are.
Yes.
So what's your take on that?
You're always going to have the lifeblood of any federal, even state local investigator, is you have informants. Because they can get into things that you can't get into. And you wind up, you know, these people can make or break cases for you. And it's the damnedest thing where who turns informant. And you have no idea. I mean, when I was working in New York and I was in the Marshal Service, you'd wind up having these huge narcotics conspiracies that they've all been rounded up. And you have a guy that's like the main guy, and it's his brother-in-law that's, you know, turning against him. Or even his brother. I've gone out on warrants where the guy had a murder warrant, and the main informant was his girlfriend. You know, you never
know. That's pretty much standard procedure. You always look for the girlfriend or the wife or the ex-wife, and you can get a tremendous amount of information.
Yeah, well,
what I'm talking about is no relation to, let's say, the suspect. And all of a sudden, a paid informant that was recruited and basically trained or had special skills or whatever, but it didn't have anything to do with the suspect. It was all by the federal government. I feel a little uneasy when all of a sudden these informants come out. And to me, their credibility goes down a notch when no one knew that they were there except the federal government. And then all of a sudden, all the juicy stuff comes out, and this paid informant is kind of like the moving gear in the entire case, and it all relies on him and what his recollection is of whatever he heard or saw or recorded or obtained. And I always have an uneasy feeling when there was no link between the informant and the targeted suspect. I don't know if you get that same feeling, because go ahead.
Yeah, the problem how we always dealt with informants is what's the motivation, and you're almost happy when they just want. Well, you know, it's like you want the guys, you want them to be, you know, for a reason, and you don't care if it's an angry ex-spouse or ex-significant other, or you know, somebody that's gotten the short end of the stick with the person that you're looking to investigate on, but you're right, you're going out on a limb with the credibility, and is this person telling you the whole truth? And it is very, and that's why I know in the days when I was working, they would encourage you that if you had an informant, to then try to introduce an undercover agent or officer, and then remove the informant, because this way you're not relying solely on the informant. And there are many cases I've talked to other agents where a guy promised to do all sorts of stuff. They got him out of jail. And next thing you know, the guy takes off. And it was just amazing. We had that one. You remember that kid that we did jumped all through the hoops to get him out of jail?
Oh, yeah.
And then he was going to do all that work for us. And I can't remember the name of the kid. And
it was a bomb case.
Was it? No, this was it a bomb case? Or was it the guys were dealing drugs or doing something. It was
they were doing drugs too, but I remember it was a bomb case. Isn't this the one where he gave us the brick of C4?
No. This one, it was, remember, you had to speak to the judge because this guy had like three separate cases going on at the same time. And he was like 22, 23, and the kid already had multiple felonies. And he was the most likable kid you ever saw. Remember we stashed him in a hotel room? I forget, I don't know if it was at the, what's the one that looks like the, what's the one that looks like the pyramid? The name escapes me up there. But, and it turned out that the kid had a gun. He calls me and tells me, I got a gun, I took it to show you. And then my boss is going, you got to lock him up. And so there I am, marching him into, you know, into jail. And he's crying, and I felt really bad. He wanted me to introduce me to his mother, who had been a stripper or something. I'm like, no, thank you. I'll go on eHarmony and try my luck there.
God!
Yeah, no, it was a nice kid. He really was. And you know what? You did all the heavy lifting on this. But when the kid wound up with the gun, the boss says, I got to bring somebody. I got to lock him up. I got to take him in, and you know. And there I am, and I'm like, oh my god, this is just a mess. And then you know, I had to go to U.S. Attorney's office, and I told the guy, dump this case. Because the assistant U.S. attorney was like, I can do this, but it's going to get kind of ugly. I was like, look, guys, I said, get rid of this thing. Just tell them it doesn't work, and we'll get rid of it. We'll toss them back in a clink. Clark County's not going to care. And, you know, and then I was able to kind of get it moved along. But, you know, there are some people that have the gift of gab and know how to go here and there. And you have professional informants. I mean, and they're making good money. You know, they're making more than
exactly.
You and I here. And quite frankly, they're putting it on the line, so they should get compensated. But if you have, the key with informants is that if they establish a track record of being truthful and doing what they said that we're going to do, and that you can turn around and say, yep, through this guy's assistance, we locked up these five guys and all these different cases and put them away. And then after a while, it's like a resume. And then you can actually, and you've seen it, you handle him from one guy to another. And I've had other guys that show up at my door that said, you know, I could do this for you and that for you. And then my boss, you know, as much as I disagree with him a lot of things, he said, well, call the list. He said he worked for the FBI at one point. He had done some good work, and I got a hold of the agent. The guy's like, look, that guy's time has passed. You know, he's not going to. And yeah, pretty soon, just like the agent said, the guy didn't want to work that hard. He was coming up with all sorts of stuff. He didn't like the fact that I asked him if we're going to meet at 3. We meet at 3. He didn't like it. And I said, goodbye. And I took him off the rolls, and then he wound up in Metro. They picked him up and tried to use him. And I wound up sitting in the car watching this thing go down, and it was like he didn't show up. And, you know, so yeah, you get what you get sometimes. And then you run the risk, too.
It all works into the care, feeding, and maintenance of your informant.
Yes, and when you're finished handling some of these guys, you're better off. Like, now you have the skills and ability to start an alpaca farm. Because you've already, like, nursed this person and done all these things, and you've been there with them through all sorts of stuff. Do you remember the one, the husband and wife team we worked on the bomb case that we wound up?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, the wife would ask me, tell me that I should take her out. She deserves a night out, and that I should take her out. And I said, no, I can't do that. And she's like, well, why not? I said, there's a regulation against going out with zombies, and I can't do it. I'm sorry. You know, and
I think I remember that, too. And, boy, she was sure a looker.
Yeah, she was a looker, all right. She would have needed no makeup to be a cast member on The Walking Dead, one of the experts. I mean, it was... That was a bad one. I mean, you try because you're always in the hopes that you're going to strike gold one day and this person's going to turn over something to you. I mean, and then remember the other one that was in a motorcycle gang where he was like a hang-around?
He
wanted to fix the ticket and we're going to do this and, you know, and then he would just disappear. Nice guy. I mean, you know, I think at one point after we had stopped working, we had, like, terminated our agreement. I met him for lunch one day at one of the malls out there. You know, we just sat there and talked about stuff and, you know, pleasant guy, you know, but it was like, you know, they kind of bill things and then they can't deliver. But the money is there, but I did have an informant call me out of the cold. And I was a marshal. I was tracking down a guy that had been on the run for about 15 years. He was living in Mexico and flying into Canada. Back then, all you needed was a driver's license. And the guy wanted the money. And sure enough, he produced all the information. I had it all set up. He landed in Vancouver. I had the Mounties waiting for them. They swore out a provisional warrant. They locked them up, and I went up and got them. So, I mean, you never know where they're going to come about. You can promise.
Let me ask you this, Doug. Metro, of course, had informants, and I had informants.
Right.
And when I say that, is do you ever have you ever had an informant that he is totally yours? You don't share him. You don't even let anybody know who your informant is, and you never run him through the data system and the criminal history system, because once you do that, your informant is now everybody's informant. So,
no.
Have you ever had one of those?
No, I did not.
I had five in my entire career. I knew what they were. I knew that they had a lot of information, and they were also bullshitters, okay?
Yep.
But I never ran them in the system. I never, if you ever want to keep an informant alive or your informant, I never ran them in the system, and nobody knew I had them. Was there a requirement in the federal system that if you developed an informant that you had to let the department know?
Oh, yeah. It was a document that you had to produce that was about 3 or 4 pages long. And would ask questions like, has this guy ever had a felony before? You know, what was it for? And you'd go through all these questions. And if the guy had a resume that would make your hair turn white, they would be like, no, thank you. I can speak to that. There was a guy in my old office when I was in Vegas, and I think he just got out of prison. But he wound up with a guy. He wound up making his way up into, I think it was Yakima, Washington. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was a good guy, very well experienced in law enforcement at the state and local level before he went to ATF. And he wound up as a supervisor up there. He signed up a guy to be an informant. And I remember somebody reading me this story. He came over. The guy had been incarcerated or locked up in 46 states. It was an incredible record. This guy should have never been allowed to be an informant. And this, he filled out all the documentation, and it got approved all the way up the line. And the guy's running around in Yakima someplace. I think my old coworker rented him a room at one of those no-tell motels. He's living there. The guy was absolutely fit the description of a super predator. He winds
of a,
up...
Of a what?
A super predator, if you remember from the Clintons.
Oh, a super predator. Okay, yeah.
This guy cons some young girl while he's up in Washington that he's a photographer and that he can help her and take pictures and do all this. And he takes her back to his room, and basically he holds her against her will for a couple of days, and he's raping and sodomizing her. And I think at one point the police are called, and he somehow cons the police that this is okay. And they call my now former coworker, and they said, is this guy working for you? And the first thing out of his mouth is, what has he done now? And they explain, now he's provided valuable evidence for the government, this and that and this and that. Well, this abuse continues on another day or so. And finally, the girl convinces this animal that she has an STD and that she's got to go to a doctor. So he takes her to an urgent care clinic, and she tells the doctor what's going on. This guy calls the police, and finally he gets locked up. And now you start going through everything, and you're looking at it and you're going, this guy should have never been signed up. This guy should have been the man in the iron mask. He should have never been allowed to be out. And I know my agency had to pay a good piece of cash to this woman for all the pain and suffering. It was terrible. So, I mean, I can say that when you sign guys up, there are records checks that you do, but all the documentation is kept in the office. It's in a very strong safe. Only the supervisor has access to the safe. And that's the way, so it's not put on a computer database someplace that somebody can hack into and look at.
Right.
So that's how they control who's got access. But then again, I knew a guy.
If you recall, you and I worked a case very similar that ended up in Alamo, Nevada.
Yes.
Okay. Now, that one was just absolutely total corruption, whereby the supervisor, who only is the only person that has access to registered narcotics informants, was in on this murder.
Yeah.
And And he also had other people that were in on this murder. And even though they didn't, LVMPD supervision didn't drop the hammer, they were complicit. So, I mean, who the hell do you trust nowadays when something like that can occur? And then my hypervigilance in trying to bring everybody to justice, well, all that ended up being is just one big blockade where I couldn't even work the case. I even offered to work the case because I had three suspects in the original murder identified, and they wouldn't even let me do that without I would have done it without any pay. I would have done it on my own time, my own equipment, and they still wouldn't let me do it. Now, that's real control. That's real corruption. And this is on just on a rinky-dink police department that you didn't know who was on your side or who was going to stab you in the back. So well, I don't know if you've ever felt that way working for a BATF.
Yeah, you have tons of this. You have the Fast and Furious. And that was something thought up by the bosses. And somebody thought it was a good idea to do what they did. And I knew somebody that was an intel analyst when I wound up, ending my career up at headquarters. And there were meetings with the special agents in charge of the Phoenix Field Division and the Houston Field Division and what's the other one? The Dallas Field Division and Los Angeles Field Division. And they're talking about this because it was started out of Phoenix, and the SAC is telling them all this stuff. And finally, I think the SAC from the L.A. Field Division goes, when are you going to stop this? Well, you know, we're doing this and we want to do that. And it's you know, these guys, they start stuff and then they force it down on the agents. And you had two guys there that were, or one was an informant, and he was like a double agent, and he's actually a triple agent. So he was working for the cartel, pretended to be working for the ATF, and then was really working for the cartel. I mean, you know, and then look at that disaster that occurred. And that was all management. And then you had, I remember the first line supervisor, when some of those agents were going, hey, you can't do this, you got to stop it. And the supervisor, you know, he gets on the email, and I don't know why these guys, any boss, any person out there, do not start writing these tomes like your Alexander Dumas, the Three Musketeers, or Don Quixote, or whatever. You can't be writing these things. And he wrote them, and he was badgering the agents and telling them this is cutting-edge law enforcement. If you don't like it, you can go join a sheriff's department or something like that, work at a jail. And, boy, that thing really blew up. It just really exploded. I think they had requested the deputy director from my agent, my former agency, and I think the SAC of the Dallas Field Division to show up at Jason Chaffetz last week.
And just for our listening audience, SAC means special agent in charge?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And they wanted to talk to him, but they wanted to talk to these two guys about, I can't even remember what it was. I think it had some light touching on the Fast and Furious. One of the guys wasn't even around during then. I don't know why they requested him, but if the guys had showed up, they'd have probably been on the grill for 10 minutes and they would have went home. And the attorneys told them not to show up, so they sent the acting director instead. And I think Jason Chaffetz took his belt off and beat the guy within an inch of his life for, how dare you, I asked for these two guys and you show up instead. And you know, so these bosses, I they get involved in too much of these things and they force it down, or it's a control issue. I knew another man. He's retired now a couple of months, and he had a case where they were dealing with terrorists. They were going to sell, or they were trying to buy surface-to-air missiles, and they were going to use cigarettes in exchange for payments. And the special agent in charge over here in Baltimore didn't want to do it because he had no understanding. Because as you know, these guys that want to be lieutenant, captain, and inspectors, they spend about a minute and a half in patrol or doing detective work, and then all of a sudden they know everything. And they tried to the guy shut it down. And then I was finding out that, they were lying to the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Secret Service, the FBI, because they were all in on this. And I think I was one of my friends that was there. Well, I have a friend that had access to the inside knowledge. And he said, the Secret Service SAC was calling the ATF SAC a coward. You're un-American for shutting this down. I mean, it was just a terrible. And I knew one of the bosses involved in that case. And it was really ugly. I mean, they tried to fire him and do all sorts of stuff.
Looks like we're going to commercial. Stay on the line, Doug. I'll get back with you.
Hear the sound of a gentle moon on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria, from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promote stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Would odors, mold, and mildew describe your basement or crawl space? It doesn't have to be that way. Transform them into a fresh, healthy, usable one with the technologically advanced Wave Moisture Control Units. The computerized operation maximizes moisture control and also expels harmful radon, combustion gases, and numerous other pollutants. Dehumidifiers are old technology that do nothing for air quality and waste energy. Wave units are intelligent, self-monitoring, do not need maintenance, and will save you hundreds in electricity. Wave units are still running effectively over 15 years. They've been tested and installed in public and military housing and by property managers nationwide. Buy a unit now, and if your home is not fresher and drier, you can return it for a full refund for up to 12 months. What have you got to lose? Call now. 1-888-618-WAVE. 1-888-618-WAVE. Or visit mydryhome.com. That's mydryhome.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Bum 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 bum. I feel free. Bum bum
bum bum. The 60s was a time when a generation decided not only to rebel, but to pursue an alternative lifestyle. In an explosion of ideas and ideals, you change.
Gotcha. Okay, this is Gordon Martinez. The show is called American Honor, brought to you by RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. And we have Doug, former BATF agent. This is a rarity that we have a agent that is coming forth with information that the federal government is not exactly as perfect as they would have you believe. And Doug, are you still there on the line?
I'm here.
You know, the way I see it, and mine is only from the local yokels in the police force, and it is not quite as vast as information as you guys were. But I recognize that there were two levels of screw-ups. Whenever a real blunder internally happens, all efforts are made to keep it quiet and keep it out of the public's hand. And then, of course, they're the ones that screw up and the public gets aware or gets a hint of it and then just goes ahead and exploits it as much as they can and interjects sensationalism and everything else. So, I mean, to me, that's good once in a while, but it gets real old when everything you do is so scrutinized and they find anything that they can wrong so that they can sensationalize it and sell the news. The one that probably sticks out the most, and I was in the robbery homicide section for 16 years, and it was a murder investigation where the detectives used up an inordinate amount of time, money, resources, and informants that lasted for a month and a half. Well, what happened was somehow or another, I guess somebody was just double checking. There's a lot of double checking that's supposed to go on during investigation, but there was some double checking, and all this effort, all these people, everybody was ready to submit the case and put these suspects and put them in court and prosecute them, until somebody found out that the main suspect that they were after was in jail at the time of the murder. So obviously that's probably the only true excuse that you could ever have, and an alibi is to be in jail when the crime occurred. And I was there for that ass chewing, and it was just something to behold when supervision, and of course they live and breathe this anytime that they can find a detective or a regular working cop at fault. That's extra points for them. They get a star on their collar for that one. But I have to admit that was always one of my number one priorities, was to check to make sure that the suspect, regardless if it was a federal case or local case, check to see if he was in jail or not. And you double check to make sure that nobody's made a mistake in that avenue. Did you ever have anything like that, Doug?
You know, I've been sent out on crazy cases. I remember being told I had to investigate a woman who was a convicted felon that had a firearm, and they were sure of it because they had a picture of it. Okay. But the picture appeared in an article from a magazine that John Walsh used to put out in his, in his America's Most Wanted heyday. Right. And they said to me, "You got to investigate this." I go, "How the hell am I going to do this?" "Well, yeah, you got to do this." And because one U.S. attorney was on a train going someplace, ran into somebody else that they knew And they said, I can't believe this. And they showed him the article. And this is what I get thrown on my desk. And I'm going, you know, and I try to quote the magazine. They're going to protect their sources. And I'm sitting there running around in circles because the bosses would just come up with stuff. And I think a lot of the problems are when managers don't have enough field experience and they're nervous. And so they start micromanaging cases. And you know one person in particular, because you dealt with him, and when I was there, he was my supervisor. And this guy's knowledge was about 3 years long, but yet he had spent the next 10 years in headquarters jobs. And then he comes out of Mexico as the attaché, and then he's running an office. And you got to put up with this guy as he learns how to do his job. And the problems I've always found are when the bosses start trying to micromanage cases from afar. You know, whether it's special agent in charge, which is like your third-line supervisor, you know, or even, I mean, it's bad enough when you have a first-line supervisor doing it. And I remember telling that one boss, I go, this is not Law and Order, where Briscoe and Logan go in to see Van Buren, and she tells him, okay, go on and go check this and go check that, and they go marching out. I said, you can't do this way. And the bosses, when they get involved, and they're trying to manage the case, they're trying to be the lead investigator. And they're like, that works in, like, France. You remember, what was it, the Day of the Jackal?
Oh, yeah.
One of those ones, you know, where the inspector comes out, or, you know, they pull him out of a top management job, and they have him run this case. And, you know, it really never works. The Fast and Furious was like that. That was started by the upper bosses and pushed down to the lower levels. And then that was an interesting aside. I was just thinking of this on a commercial break. My agency, and probably all these federal agencies, have, like, case management branches, where these people will go into major cases, and they'll look to see what's going on, and they'll read the reports, and they make sure you got, you know, nobody's gone native or anything. And what they did was, in that particular matter, they classified the whole case as what's called 6E material, meaning it's been to the grand jury. So now, unless you're on what's called the 6E list, you don't have access to look at it. So that's how they shielded headquarters from reading all the reports, where somebody would have went, what are you doing? You can't do this. And that's how they shielded that investigation for at least a year.
My God.
And you know, when you got that, so when you've got that kind of level of, you know, that kind of support, or, you know, if for in a negative sense, there's really not much you can do. Because, you know, like in the police department, in my agency, you know, there's supposed to be checks and balances, or, you know, and they're all chinned up, and they're all working against you. So you can't even go up and make a complaint. Because they'll come out with the, you know, with the black bag squad, and next thing you know, you're, like you used to say, what was it, directing traffic? What was it, at the underpass during rainy season?
The Bonanza underpass during the rainy season, you'd be directing traffic, and usually the water level is like about 5 feet.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the kind of stuff that they do. So you wind up, and when you're in a field office like I was, that's like being on the Bounty in the middle of the ocean with Captain Blood. Unless you have a revolt, there's nothing you can do. You can't go into work. And if I were just to go back to the guy up in Yakima I used to work with, he turns around, when he takes over, he tells all the agents, from now on, I will do all your agent cashier when you're going to pay informants. Just tell me what you want, and I'll do all the paperwork, and I'll give it to you. Now, this goes against the normal procedure. You're supposed to do the paperwork. You go to the boss, he acts like an English teacher, he touches it all over all your mistakes and gives it back, and you fix it. Well, this guy was running everything. Well, it turned out later the guy had developed a tremendous gambling problem, so he was stealing money out of the agent cashier fund.
Oh, my God.
So then he winds up, when this thing goes down with the girl, now Internal Affairs comes in, and they start, you know, they sit him down, and they go, what's going on here? And I think they found something with the money, and he gets all discombobulated, and he quits on the spot. 15-year veteran quits immediately. And they turn around later, and they find out that he's been falsifying the agent cashier forms and taking money for himself. So now this guy's, his career's over. He's on his, you know, he's on the next thing, smoking to a federal correctional institute. But they turn around, and then they go after the agents. And they tell the agents, well, why did you do this? Why'd you go along with this? They go, because it's the boss. The boss told us to do this. So we did what he said. And they were trying to blame them. So instead of it just accepting you had a rogue supervisor that had a problem and this is what happened, they were trying to push it down to the lowest level, which at any department, any agency, always do it. It's agency liability and shielding the entity from themselves. And if they can push it down to the lowest patrolman, detective, or agent, that's what they're going to do. I mean, it's a tremendous
battle. I agree. You know, we had something similar to that. We had a sergeant that worked in the evidence vault, and he had a gambling problem. And when they finally busted him for it, he probably thousands of evidence bags had been tampered with. The stickers, you know, they didn't have any real glue on them anyway, and they were just terrible, these stickers that they used to issue to us. You put on these stickers that are supposed to, you know, help seal the evidence in a bag, and then when you get to court, the bag is the lid that's supposed to be sealed and all that is just flopping in the wind, and you're trying to keep this away from the defense attorney who's eyeballing the evidence and make it look like it was sealed. And then, of course, they open it in court, and they open it, you know, kind of at the bottom of the bag, and here are all these seals that the department, they probably got a hell of a deal on these seals. That didn't have any glue. And so what you had to do is you put the seal on there, and then you put a piece of tape to kind of hold the seal in place. I mean, talk about a Mickey Mouse deal. But anyway, this guy that was in charge of it, his name was McKim, he had this gambling problem, and he'd been breaking into the bags and trying to put the bags back together again. And even when they went over his house, he had evidence bags all over the interior of his house. And it was terrible, but they could never find all the bags that he had broken into. I mean, that's like a needle in the haystack. And I remember being in court, and I had impounded, I think, money and jewelry and that. And then that all changed, and we couldn't impound any more money. We still had to impound the jewelry and any of the other stolen property. I would open up the evidence bag and pray to God Almighty that McKim hadn't hit my evidence bag, and I'd open up the evidence bag, and there was nothing in there.
It was an IOU.
If you want to see somebody kind of choke and puke when something happens like that, well, you just had to be there to really appreciate it. So, and this was happening on a regular basis to detectives that were testifying in court, that there would be no evidence in the sealed evidence bag. So obviously that caused a big fervor in the police department. Have you ever had anything like that happen in the BATF?
You know, we had I was just thinking about the closest I think I've ever seen, and it's probably happened, but, you know, you have audits. We have periodic audits every 1 year, 2 years. So they start going into all of that stuff to make sure it's not been tampered with. They have, instead of just having one sergeant and that's all he does is evidence, they used to have what's called a vault custodian. They still do. And the vault custodian's job is to log everything in. Now, you know, and you as an agent or I can't get into that vault past the front door where you open it up and there's like a waiting area and you can put the stuff down and then the vault custodian will log it in and then catalog it and put it in the back. So they tried to keep so that there's not, you don't have that kind of access. Now, but it comes back to if we had an agent doing that, that wouldn't surprise me. Well, we did. We had it down in, I think it was Norfolk. We had an agent that was taking seized cigarettes and turn around reselling it. And they caught that guy about 3 years ago. Was it four? The guy had a whole racket set up. He was taking seized cigarettes, and then he had an informant, and they were setting up deals. And somebody would want to buy the cigarettes, and he'd say, go to this storage facility and on this at this storage number, and there would be no lock on it. They would pay him, or whoever they would pay him, and they would show up, and there'd be, you know, 20 cases of cigarettes, and they would load it in the car, and they would take off.
Is there big money in that kind of stealing in cigarettes? I have no idea. Is there a big demand for stuff like that, cigarettes without
tremendous amount of money to be made? You can make as much money dealing, let's say, in a tractor trailer full of cigarettes as you can dealing cocaine, and you don't even get a quarter of the time. You get
You're
more time
kidding.
For the money laundering. Yeah? Within the last 6 years, they finally made it a felony to do that. It used to be a misdemeanor. And then you would get more time for the money laundering than you would for doing that kind of cigarette deal. Oh, yeah. There was this tremendous amount of money.
So the cigarettes that are made, let's say, in Mexico, and they're smuggled in to the United States and sold. There's a lot of money in that?
Well, I can explain it after the commercial break, but no, there's not. It's not the money. It's what happens is they're manufactured, let's say, in the United States. And then what happens is you'll have them ship it out of the country.
Public service announcement from takefromcaesar.us. Only one statute explains how to tax your paycheck. Tax Code Section 83. In decisions from 1979 to 2011, the courts say Section 83 governs the taxation of all compensation for personal services, but the IRS lies on the stand, claiming to be unfamiliar with Section 83. Only one person can explain what Section 83 means, David Merlin. Visit takefromcaesar.us for more information.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
If your home has hard water, then it's likely that Limescale is clogging your pipes, damaging your appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars each year. You can eliminate Limescale in the entire house with HydroCare products available at Wave Home Solutions. Easy and efficient with no maintenance, no salts, no chemicals, and no coils. And you can buy with confidence from Wave Home Solutions. Performance guaranteed. Just go to bestwater411.com. That's bestwater411.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
This is not legal advice. This is a public service announcement from takefromcaesar.us. Only one statute explains how to tax your paycheck. Tax Code Section 83. In decisions from 1979 to 2011, the courts say Section 83 governs the taxation of all compensation for personal services, but the IRS lies on the stand, claiming to be unfamiliar with Section 83. Only one person can explain what Section 83 means, David Merlin. Visit takefromcaesar.us for more information.
And the call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. We have got Doug on the line. Doug, I don't know if I ever told you when all the time that we spent together in Las Vegas working bomb cases and those type of things, gun cases. I never asked you whether or not you knew of any crooks inside your organization, because both of us were official law enforcement officers, and I never did. So what I'm doing right now is and I always try to do everything for a reason. And the situation with the Bundys and the court trial that's going on right now against all the American patriots that were arrested and the Bundys and all this, and defense is going to have their chance. One of the people, the witnesses that's testifying, is an admitted federal informant. And he was also responsible for going in on the websites and just infiltrating everything with the Bundys. And he was the one that was basically telling people that were going to go up toward Bunkerville and support the Bundys what type of weapons to bring, what type of equipment to bring, and the type of attitude that they should prevail when they get up to the ranch. Now, remember what I said. This guy is now an admitted federal informant that had a very heavy hand in orchestrating what went on up there in Bunkerville. And that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about the credibility and the honorability of and the use of strict informants, ones that don't have any connection with anything, and they're just merely doing it for money or the fun or whatever their reasoning is, and that there is one guy now that has come forward and is telling everybody that he was the person that kept saying, bring your guns, and then he wanted to form a register of everybody that went up there, who had the gun, and what date and time that these people went on up there to support the Bundys. And now it's coming out, and this informant, is he protected in any way from any type of prosecution that you know of?
He could be, it would give him immunity from prosecution exchange for what's done. They like to soft shoe it. And they'll say, listen, I can't make you promises, but if the guy's got an ongoing case, it'll be looked upon favorably, that kind of stuff. Right. They're supposed to keep a tight leash on these guys. And the informant's supposed to report back to the handler, hey, look, this is what's going on, that's what's going on.
Right.
If the informant was trying to keep a log of all the people going up there and what type of guns they had and when they showed up, that sounds like they got direction from the agency to do that.
How can anybody justify, and I'm hoping they'll bring this out, how can they justify furthering the hatred that is developed by supposedly one of their supporters saying, hey, bring your guns up and just check in, let me know what kind of gun you have?
Well, he could have been told to do that. He could have been told to do that.
All right. Well, please call in next week, and we'll continue this discussion. Well, looks like I'll see you on the flip side. This is Gordon Martinez, American Honor, brought to RPN. Take care. Be safe.
The people, audiences, break the fences, nothing is. Let's see ya!
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.